in my heart, be of good pleasure in thy sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. And there was a rainbow around the throne in appearance like an emerald. An emerald is a beautiful stone when it is pure and clean and the light shines through it. But often an emerald is really rather obscure. It's hard to see this, but you see no light goes through this because this is what emeralds are usually like. But emeralds can also be clear and beautiful. And what that shows us is the nature of the color green. Green obviously represents the natural. We have no problem knowing that because nature around us is green. And it's a beautiful color, but it can also be a deathly color. When we hear about the last horse that rode in, that was seen when the seals were opened, we usually say, the fourth seal was opened and behold, a pale horse. But the actual original language there in Greek is chloro, or green. Behold a green horse, death. And so we have a choice. We can look at the apocalypse revealed and see that green as the green of the natural heaven, the heaven that the Lord came to establish, the beautiful living color that we see around us. Or we can see it as that obscurity that was happening in the false heavens just before the judgment, a green that was obscured, that kept the light from shining through. Some of the stones that look black are actually, if you look very closely at them, a very, very dark green. And so the green can either be a living or something dead. In the same way, when you look out at nature, if you just see nature, if you just see material things, and you don't see the life of the Lord flowing in, if you don't see the Lord's creation, if you don't see our Savior, then it is mere naturalism, as it's called. There's many teachings in the heavenly doctrine about naturalism. One interesting teaching is the difference between the first and second coming of the Lord. We read a little about it in our reading where it said that today it's even darker than ever because they have scientifics unknown to the ancients. They can use science to make you think that nature can live on its own. There are actually people that believe that. Some of the greatest scientists making one of the most wonderful discoveries about where life first flows in became an atheist because now we don't need God, he said. From a beautiful nature where the Lord could be seen so beautifully, it turned his mind dark and the pale horse came for him. And so we read here about the difference between the Lord at the first coming, where the increase of hells was from idolaters, magicians, and falsifiers of the word, while at his second coming, which it is the work of so-called Christians. These are the evils that are being judged, both of those who imbibed naturalism and also those who falsified the word. And so in both cases, the word, the letter of the word, which is the natural, was being falsified. But in the second case, they had naturalism. They believed nature. They believed that nature had its own power instead of believing that it was a creation of the Lord. Whereas at the time when the Lord came into the world, and all the ancient times, they had magic, they had idolatry, they had a firm belief that there was another world. It was true that at the time there was the Sadducees, the beginning of people who didn't believe in the afterlife, but they still believed there was a God. But incredible as it is today, there is actually people who do not believe in God. Now, one of the reasons for this, it says, is that when the picture of God gets divided into three instead of one, that turns out that people say, well, that doesn't make sense, and so they reject religion. And then instead, it says they believe in no God. It says the prevailing naturalism of the day is from no other source. And so another place it says, faith in an invisible God, which many people say, well, there's a God, but there's no way he's human. It says, faith in an invisible God shines with no other light than this, especially when God is thought of as to be a spirit, and the spirit is thought of to be like ether, which follows, but a man who regards God, does he see the ether? Consequently, he seeks God in the universe. And when he does not find him there, he believes the nature of the universe to be God. This is the origin of the prevailing naturalism of the day. So there's many different things that tie into naturalism. Another thing that is so clearly in today's world is adultery. And we read in the Heavenly Doctrine when the Apocalypse explained, is explaining the sixth commandment about thou shalt not commit adultery. It says, consequently, so far as man is in the love of adultery, so far he is in every evil, if not in act, yet in endeavor. And on the other hand, so far as man is in chaste love of marriage, so far he is in every good of love. And in fact, if not in act, yet in endeavor. Who at this day can believe that he who is in the love of adultery believes nothing of the word, nothing of the church, and even in his heart denies God? And on the other hand, that he who is in chaste love of marriage is in chastity and faith and in love to God. And also that chastity of marriage makes one with religion, and the lasciviousness of adultery makes one with naturalism. And so we see this word naturalism coming and going, and we can think again of nature. Nature is a beautiful place when we see it as a theater of heaven, where the Lord is showing us what heaven is like. When we see life flowing in, when we see that every instant of an instant, the Lord is creating and keeping things going. But unfortunately, in today's world, the scientifics that were unknown to the ancients have crept into the minds of people, and they actually believe in natural causes. They actually believe that it's an external thing that makes something move rather than an internal endeavor from within. And that kind of thinking starts making you think that you start looking for natural solutions to your problems, whether it be in your job, whether it be in the church, whether it be in your marriage, whether it be with your children. People search out natural solutions. It's forgetting that it is the Lord from which all truth and all good come, and the importance of that. Now, one other thing in the representation that we saw of the Lord, where the emerald rainbow was around him, we noticed his appearance, it says, was like a jasper and a sardius stone. And the jasper and a sardius stone is a white stone and a red stone. In this case, this is a stone together, where the jasper's on one side and the sardius on another. And this is called an agate. And an interesting teaching about an agate we have in the writings is talking about the word. And it says, if you don't know about the spiritual sense of the word, then it says, he must just judge it from the sense of the letter. When yet this sense is like an envelope enclosing precious things, which are its spiritual sense. Therefore, when the internal sense is unknown and the divine holiness of the word cannot be estimated, only as when a precious stone is estimated from the matrix enclosing it, which is often appearance like an ordinary stone. Or only as a casket made of jasper, or amethyst, or agate, or one estimates the diamonds, the rubies, and the oriental topazes lying within in order. In other words, it looked like an agate at the time of the Last Judgment, when really it's a ruby, and really it's divine love in its fullness. And yet because of the state of the world at that time, it was darkened. And it looked more like a normal precious, a semi-precious stone. And also another number says that when the sacraments, baptism and Holy Supper in the Christian church are like gems in the scepter of a king, but if their uses are not known, it is merely like two figures of ebony on a staff. These two sacraments in the Christian church may be likened also to two rubies or carbuncles on the robe of an emperor. But if the uses are unknown, they're like two carnelians, which is very much like a sardius, on the cloak, or crystals on its cloak. In other words, comparing diamonds and rubies and sapphires and carbuncles. It's really what is there, spiritual truth shining forth. And yet when they aren't seen, it looks like just an ordinary stone. And that's often the case. The matrix around it is just common day. And so the heavens are actually in the order of a ruby and a diamond or blue, and then the emerald at the outside. But that emerald can be living or it can be dead. And so when we look at things around us, we need to understand how the Lord is there. And that is why the nature of the heavenly doctrines is as it is. It talks about the leaves of the tree as a medicine for the nations. Those leaves of the tree are green. And they're green because of the way they absorb the light and they give off some. And it's actually a fascinating thing. They represent the rational. Do you know what the rational is? It's when you think about spiritual things and natural things at the same time and you see how they fit together. When you see a blade of grass growing and you can feel the power of the Lord creating it. That's the rational. And so the heavenly doctrines gave us rational truths as medicine for our minds so that we can understand how God is present. They gave us the spiritual sense so in a rational way we can understand the Word. They gave us all these things about science and we wonder, why are they all there in the heavenly doctrine? Why did the Lord choose a scientist? He tells us he was a spiritual fisherman. He was searching for the truth, but he sought it in nature to begin with. He spent many of his years as a natural scientist, but then the Lord called him. And he said he reasoned in vain until he knew about a heaven and about the sun in the heaven and about the degrees and all these wonderful things that the heavenly doctrine teaches us. They can open our mind so we can actually see the Lord's creation going on in everything. And then science, instead of being that pale or green horse of death, can become that living, wonderful green of the natural heaven, the green of the living things around us. That is our choice. We can either believe our senses and ourselves, or we can believe the Word and the Lord. For as it says, the source of all evil in every church is believing yourself and your senses instead of the Lord in His Word. And we cannot understand what is around us, no matter how much we study from science, unless we also look at it in those beautiful rational truths, which are actually spiritual truths couched in natural truths that the heavenly doctrine gives us. And in this way, the last judgment can take place, both in our own minds and hopefully someday in the world at large, so that the Lord's emerald rainbow can be seen in its entirety. It's a very interesting thing. There's a beautiful garden described where the trees are like rainbows going out in various, or a rose garden, where the different roses are going out in different order. And what is fascinating, at the very center of the rose garden, there were green roses. Beautiful green roses, which represents, no doubt, that when the natural is purified, and this is a garden of conjugal love, when the natural is purified, then the Lord is present everywhere.